I let's check first that both you all and I are here for the same purpose. I came for the probability class 2030. Are you for the same thing or something? Okay, so we don't want to find that out at the end of the class. Okay. So between this class together, textbook for this class is a library version. There are some copies on reserve for tour that I think I've seen, and there may be one or two more copies left to check out, or maybe not, but they say should be available in the bookstores soon, if not already. A book called Probability by Jim Pittman. So whether the name is Jim, James, or really Jim, I'm not sure. But in the book, it's written Jim. So this is a thing that you ought to know quickly. By literally Jim Pittman. Sounds like an optimistic title, because it's a very general. The course you're taking is a little more realistic. This Math 2030 is called Elementary Probability. So it's really not that fancy stuff. Okay, the probability could be a lot. So elementary probability. Teleportation to make it at 9:30. ready for the next class. Don't really know. I couldn't find out. When I asked them, they said it's up to you. You can keep them to 9:30 if you want. And I think it's a bit crazy. But they seem to be serious about it. So maybe somebody, you know, using the angelic face, asked innocently, do you really mean it? Okay, and come back and let me know, because I don't think I can play that role. I think I'll be getting on their nerves. If I insist to find out, why do they claim to have this class for 60 minutes? Okay? So we'll try to make it 50. See how it goes. Exactly how the points will be distributed for the final grade, exactly how many tests, exactly when they're scheduled, and many other details. Let's leave it for, say, next time or before next time, somewhere online. Too many things to talk on the first day. And too many little things to talk on the first day. I think we might want to take this class no matter what. Keep in mind, please, that I believe we're paying quite a bit of money for these classes. Okay, I believe so. I kind of have an idea, but it's not 100% guaranteed that I know well. But what I know sounds to me like a lot of money. I went to school in the second millennium, the third. I went in the second millennium. It was free. It is not free. The point is, you have a busy schedule. You have to make sure that you come to classes not just the first day to look at the, say, guy's face, like how dangerous he really is, whether you have to come all the time or not. Yes, you do. Because otherwise, either the grade is not going to be that good, or it's not going to be a passing grade altogether. For some obvious reasons, it's not easy to learn by yourself, alone. Okay? I know getting up to make it to 8:30, depending on where you're coming from, and I know some people come from miles and miles away. I only come from 11 kilometers away, and I can still feel it. But it's not easy, I know that. On the other hand, you're young, so you have to make it in order to hear what I have to say. Of course, you can read your book, but don't read the book during the class, because that's what you're paying for. You can read the book at home. Or try to not, I mean, it's easier said than done, try to not fall behind. Many times it's deliberate. Try to not read your computer screens when I talk to you. Try to not fall behind in the course. Why? A very simple reason, aside from, you know, that's a bad sign that you may not be doing well on the homework, quizzes, whatever, tests, final exam, and so on. The not so obvious thing, unless you think about it, is when you fall behind, and assuming you still come to class, and you listen to the story being told, you're not going to understand that much. Okay? And assuming that you're still coming and taking it, okay, that unpleasant feeling that you don't know what's going on, and you take the notes as is recommended, you would be a note taker. One who doesn't understand the subject. Usually note takers are selected among people who actually know that subject, and when they take the notes, they understand what they're being told. They understand what they write down, and they write down in a nice way that's connected to other things that he told, said earlier. But, okay, somebody who's behind and comes to class, you're just taking notes. and maybe not even very good ones, because you don't understand very well what's being said. Sometimes you can't see because, you know, some guys like me have a bad handwriting that's kind of smallish and so on. And what's your money worth, hundreds of dollars for that class? Before you do, you take some notes you don't understand. And there's stuff in the book, but you have to read it, and it's, you're behind, and it doesn't feel very comfortable, and so on. So it's really bad to be behind. Okay, so my recommendation is, if you don't understand something, well, you can't really ask questions in class, I believe, because it doesn't work that way. We don't have the time. That's just the bright theory. You see that in the movies. The guy says something, and then somebody, some smart kid over there, challenges it. And it's beautiful. They have a discussion. Well, look at the clock. Okay, how many times do you do that? You'll find out. Look at the scheduling. You're going to see that pretty soon on Moodle. And imagine if you do that a few times, you either you'll be running the rest of the semester to catch up to finish on time, or you're not going to finish altogether. Okay, that's just for the movies. And if you pay attention, the class also ends very fast in the movies after that bright, you know, shiny exchange that they put in the movie. So in reality, it doesn't seem to work. I don't believe it can work like that. Very occasionally, and I would say, definitely, if you see a mistake on the board, then you don't wait. Okay, if you see a mistake on the board, or if any suspect, honestly suspect there's been a mistake on the board, you should not wait. But if you have other questions that you didn't understand something very well, it's better to wait for the break. Okay? We don't have more than 1 hour here, so it's a bit not that good. If we had 2 hours in a row, then we could talk about it during break. Here we don't have it. I also recommend when you don't understand something, so you can't be asked right away, because we cannot do that very often. Okay? Write it down, and I suggest something like at the back of your notebook. I also suggest that you don't take one notebook to all your classes and, you know, take notes for whatever you have on that day and the next day and the next day, and then you go searching your notebook for the material for this course and that course, the real man. Well, fortunately, notebooks, I believe, are not that expensive, so try to... I'm not talking about computers, I'm talking about papers. Try to have it separate. If you have a thicker one that you're pretty damn sure you're not going to fit it in one course, or make sure that you have a clear division somewhere in the middle, or whatever, 33 parts or something, and respect that, and take your notes separately for different courses. Attendance. I plan to take attendance for my own information. Okay, I can't really bring myself to believing that it's a good idea to give points for attendance. It's like bribery. I'll be having people come into class to sleep, even in front of me, again, for the first row, or even read the news, or even more seriously, do their whatever important homework that's due right away in the next class. Okay? While needing to be there for the points for attendance. That's a really bad deal for me to be giving away points for that. So it seems to me like more like bribery to give points for attendance. So I don't think I'll do it. And I can't take points away for attendance either, because there could be bright, shiny bright kids who just don't need to come. You know, I show you on the exam that they know it already. It's very easy, which is true. But don't take it like that. And they don't need to come, so why force them to come, right? Why take points away? Because they're not coming when they don't actually need it. But these are extremely rare cases, and they're also based on not just being very bright, but having a strong background, which seems to be doubtful for some reasons. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there are some provinces in Canada who are desperate to raise the level of math education in, well, before university. Most of them talk about being able to get this. It's already too okay, well before that. Let them not do modifications on a calculator or a computer, because it's not going to work if they really want to learn anything in math. Okay? There are smart people who claim that this is the old school, that in these days you don't need to learn this and that and this and that, but it's there on the internet, right? So they know where the information is. Well, knowing where the information is not going to help you solve any problem. Okay? That may help you solve problems that are solved. That might help you where the information is. If you ever given a problem that's not solved, you know, you may find that book online, you don't have to pay for it. You can read it and still have no idea how to solve the problem. Okay? So you will not be able to interconnect your information that you read. Not to mention that it's not going to get into your memory that fast. Because right now, biology is going to fall behind technology in terms of, you know, how fast they can learn and how much they can learn and so on. So I'm not sure what's going to happen about that. You know, some people, including the late, Stephen Hawking, was a bit terrified at artificial intelligence. Okay, because there are abilities that the human mind biologically doesn't have it yet, and by the time mankind learns to speed that up, I don't know what's going to happen, the technology will be ahead. I'm not sure how this is going to go. But anyway, you need to know how to do things. In order to know how to do things, think of yourselves, something you really know how to do well, and think about why you know that so well. I don't know what silly thing to say, right? But swimming, riding a bike, I don't know, something. Even reading. Do you remember the pains of learning how to read? I'm not sure that you remember very well. Maybe vaguely, but not really the pain. Just there was pain, maybe. So think about that. How come you're doing something so well? Well, how they say it, because maybe you know it like your own pockets. So it should be like that in just about any area. If you learn in this class material that you know it like your own pockets, you'll be able to do problems, if they're not too hard, in a reasonable amount of time. If you only know where the information is, okay, then it may take you forever to learn to solve something, which, given that we have time limitations, that means never. Okay, it won't happen. You won't be able to solve it in real time. So I'll be taking attendance on iClickers, I plan. Whether you know what that is or not, there'll be some information on Moodle about, you know, how to open an account and so on, and sign in, and keep track of who's coming, who's not coming, because when you have a desperate student at the end of the semester telling you that he had a bad day, okay, guys, keep. Okay. All the bad examples we take it on that. So he had a bad day on the exam day, you know, and he's been here every day, every time he was in class. Let me check. Okay? No way to check. So, at least, if you have the attendance and you have a student who's doing scarily on an exam, and you look at the attendance and you see the attendance is also scary, I say, maybe that's the reason. Okay? So that's the reason, that's my reason for taking attendance. Because I need to know. You know, I cannot say, poor scared kid, now okay, be honest. Say honestly, whether you came or not to the class. He's really hard pressed. I'm going to say, yes, I did, even if he hasn't. So, how do you find out? Well, I'll try to make the attendance near the end of the class. So, you don't have students who come say hello, sign in, and then leave. And I'll try to make it so you don't have a place to sit. or you're not, you don't mean to sin. Yeah, please find a place. Is there any bad food? I can see now, next time, if I got the cap empty, I'll be so many of you were encouraged. Guys go on submarines, and some like it tight. Okay, so this is pretty relaxed. Look, you have like 30 centimeters of free space. Okay, unless you're very wide in shoulders. Free space to the next person. I don't think it's that tight yet. So don't give up. Don't think that this is scary. Yeah, I think it's pretty nice. The problem is, will we see it again? You should take a picture. Is that legal? In democracy? Oh, I feel like taking a picture because this looks so good, I already feel I'll be missing it on Friday. I'll try, of course, to make the class interesting. But there's only so much I can do, and unless one has the madness to think this is interesting, there's not much hope that you'll love it. Okay? No matter how good the clown in front of you is. Let's see. Questions so far? Already?
Yeah.
Did you pick a little bit? I was thinking about it at some point and went out my mind. You take the latest, okay, that's a short answer, but I haven't been paying much attention to this detail. I don't see here in the book mentioned the edition, so be sure to ask for the latest, okay? As I know, they'll be in the bookstore, and I don't believe I'll bring one that's old. It should be the newest. Yes?
What are your office hours?
They seem to be, I have two classes in a row this in the morning, so after yours, I need to run right away, so unfortunately, because I also like to chat, I really can't afford it. I have to run right away to a different building to my next class at 9:30. Okay? And it's not looking good. Okay? So after that, at 10:30, I'll enjoy a break till my next class at 1:30. And I'm thinking of squeezing my office hours in there. And I kind of put them all in one place, because if I say this hour is for that class and that hour is for that class and the third hour is for the third class, it's most likely not going to work for many students. So I'll have to still think about it, but I believe that saying here are the 3 hours for all the three classes in all or each of the 3 days. We have this, I have this class, you have this class, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, okay, so 10:30 to 1:20, because I need to make it to the other place, okay, roughly speaking, it could be even 1:15, I have to see how long it takes me to get there. That's the plan, but again, it'll be on the syllabus on, that's why I didn't put that on the board, it's not strongly decided, but that seems to be the idea, seems to be the intention. Yes? Oh, yes.
Is the rule up yet? I didn't see last time I checked.
It's up, but it's not short. You know, there are these tricks that you make it invisible for students. Because haven't really decided all of the time details. Yeah? They just enjoy the class. We haven't done anything yet. That's pretty enjoyable. But it will be. It should really be on Wednesday. Up and running. Anything else? Now that cascade, you'll have to interrupt. Okay, you're closer.
What do you think is the best way to study past history?
Oh. They say everybody has its own style. My idea is you have to understand what's going on. Okay? So in other words, I don't like learning by heart. Okay? So if anybody needs to learn by heart in order to remember something, it's not looking good. You have to understand what's going on. You have to understand why it's like that, not the other way around. Well, they kind of discourage us for various reasons, some good, some bad, from showing proofs. But the proof is exactly why you do that, that the theorem tells you, you know, if you want to do this, do that. If you want to achieve this, do that. Why? Well, if you look at the proof, you see why. And if you really understand that, then you understand that you can do things with it. Many times in solving problems, you just have to do variations of the tricks that you learn when the theorem is proved, when the theory is created. Okay? And by discouraging you to learn theory, when you learn math and maybe other things too, they're also giving your heart a big handicap with solving problems. Because it's about the same tricks that you see in theory. Okay? So you have to see, you know, like we, or maybe the girls too, I don't know, take clocks apart at a certain age. Why? Because we want to see why they work, how they work, and so on. The funny thing is, when you put it back, there are always spare parts that can always sell for a profit. Some strange reason, right? There's always more parts when you put it back than it was original. So, you're supposed to find. So, it's the same with math. You need to know how it's put together and take it apart and put it back together. In other words, explain how it was done in both directions. Go to the detail and go to the big picture. So that's one way. And then, other than that, the way you like it. For example, I would not recommend listening to music as you study. Yes? Yeah, I think there is a small army of PAs awaiting to grade certain things from you. So I'll try to see how to do it so you learn stuff and I don't kill them. Because there are students like you who are more advanced, and the grades they get in their studies matter even more than yours. Okay, this job thing, what they're going to get matters a lot in their grades. And it's not really good to kill them by asking them to grade all the little things from the little students who many times don't seem to know even how to write something. They write in the middle, they write in all sorts of ways. So say my opinion is, what I've seen, what I've heard, they don't get much training in high school on how to learn something, how to learn and how to write an explanation to something. They're really painful. Plus everybody has their own handwriting, some are easy to write, read, some are not. It's really killing to ask to grade a lot of stuff to these people. On the other hand, you do need quite a bit of exercise in order to get to know something. And if you could be trusted that you could do it even without being assigned more than just verbally, there they are. Like I had in high school, in the math class, okay, there they are, your exercises, your extra exercises, okay? There they are. I think in 4 years of high school, I didn't have any homework assignment. None. Okay? There they are. We had extra books with problems. Those people felt that at the end of the textbook, and then the sections in textbook, there wasn't enough problems, many problems, or hard enough problems. So there were dedicated books with extra problems, with the same theory, but harder questions, with proofs too, with solutions too, and we practiced. And the teachers just said, there they are. And many times you recognize from the name of the section or chapter you're in class, those books with problems were structured in the same way. They had chapters called the same way, with questions, maybe a little theory in the beginning to remind you what you need to know. You want to do that. So why did that work? Why did that work? Somebody here who's seen me before knows the secret, right? How could that possibly work? No homework, 4 years. There's your home, there's some questions you may want to look at. And we did. Why? You don't know. There were entrance exams. Beginning to high school, at age 14 and a half, beginning grade 9, there's an entrance exam. Beginning to grade 11, there was an entrance exam. To get out of high school, the joke was that school is free, but you'd pay money to get out of it. That meant tutoring, extra tutoring for those who were not doing well. You'd have to pay money to get out of it. That means to graduate, to pass those exams, because there was a graduation exam from high school, which you know it over here, but it's the French fault. The French are at fault, you know, the baccalaureate. Okay? And then after that, so that was in May, all the parents trembled. And then in July, they trembled again, even more seriously. Because 15, 16, 17, the whole country trembled. It was university admission. So, do you dare to be told there's your extra questions, do them, and not do it? Of course, we have some tests in class once in a long while, and you do poorly on that if you didn't practice. So I went straight. And on top of everything, if you didn't get into university, you go to the army full time for foot soldier position. Yeah, no officer, foot soldier. Are you on that? But probably not. Okay? Well, there's a secret. Okay? No homework, free. Yeah, I tell you what to do, you don't do, you pay later. Okay, well, the parents knew that, so when the kid forgot, the parent reminded them. Okay? So that's the secret. Grading. Haven't fully decided, but I suspect the way I've done it in the past is that we don't want to keep the graders all at school. You're not going through tons of papers, but we actually scan them, put them on CrowdMark, and everybody grades at their leisure, middle of the night or whatever, from whatever they are. Yeah? The thing is, how do you grade smaller things? How do you grade homework? How do you grade many quizzes? Haven't fully decided. With a large, large class, have to think about it. Okay? Well, let's try to do something serious so that you have many other questions to ask. So, believe it or not, you would have in university a class period on counting. So let's see if we know how to count. Counting. Believe it or not. Okay? So, do we know how to count? Not on your fingers. Fancier stuff. So, for example, how do you decide that two sets are equally big? Okay? So, definition. Let A be not empty. So sets, okay, mathematical language. I'm not going to write a lot of literature, okay? And then we say, in layman's parlance, would be A and B have the same number of elements. So this is the number of elements in A, or the real word is cardinal. Cardinal of A. Cardinal of B. So if you don't know something, you can make a little note on your notebook. When I said this is cardinal, you can write, it's called cardinal. But I cannot write on the board everything I say, okay, for obvious reasons. So cardinal of A is cardinal of B, if and only if there is flipped over E, there is a function F defined on A with values in B, bijective. Okay? Bijective. What's bijective? So IE, injective, and surjective. What are these? Well, I hope you know. Injective is a function that never takes the same value twice. If I can show you some arrows, f of x and f of y, if they happen to be equal, that one making my fingers, okay, touch, well then, it doesn't look good unless x and y is really the same guy. But if they're different, and f of x and f of y are equal, then this function is not injective. It repeats the value f of x twice, once for x and once for y. So it's not injective. So injective functions do not repeat values. Surjective functions hit everything in the target. So a surjective function here, F, will hit all the little B's in capital B. Okay? So, example. F defined on, say, real numbers, with values in real numbers, f of x equal x squared. Is this injective or not? Not looking good, okay? Not injective. Why? Well, f of 1 and f of minus 1, for example, are equal to 1. So what does that say? That 1 and minus 1 go to the same place, 1. So that breaks what injective should be. So that's why it's not injective. Or it doesn't have to be 1. You know, f of a and f of negative a, whatever a is a squared. And if a is now 0, then you have two numbers, a and minus a, that go to the same place. Not an injective. Is it surjective?
No.
No, why?
Can't have negative.
It can't keep any negative. A square is never negative. This is a very easy example to see. Now, if I put a complicated formula, it'll be much harder to say if it's injective or not surjective. It's just for the purpose of understanding what injective and surjective are. So not surjective. Okay? However, f defined on 0 plus infinity with values in 0 plus infinity, whoops, let me call it g, with values in 0 plus infinity, g of x equal x squared, so same formula, but it's a different function, because a function is made of three things in mathematics. Now these two sets, where is the input, where is the output, and the formula, so to speak, okay, the way to how to get input to what output, this is a function. So compared to the previous example, it's different A and B. It's different in this case. So that's why I'm not calling it F again. I'm calling it G. It's a different function. Okay? In your books in high school, apparently, unless you have some books I don't know of, which is possible, they would say this is the same function. It isn't. Okay? But that's fancy stuff. How about this one? Is it? Any of it? Injective, surjective? Yes, what? Both, yes? Surjective for sure, because every positive number is a square. And injective, because you can see how you take the same value twice. Once with a positive, once with a negative. But here you don't have negative inputs. So you can take only value once. The positive square root of y gives you the output y. Okay? You cannot get a y other than positive square root of y. Negative square root of y is the other possibility, as you know, but it's not allowed for the input space, the domain of the function. So this one is bijective. And if it's bijective, it really means that if you used a Venn diagram, whatever it's called, like bubbles to show some points for input. It's a very peculiar picture, like ABC for set A, for set B, UVW. So the arrows do not converge because it's injective, and everything is hit because it's surjective. Why is that? Well, in this case, when it's bijective, the function is also reversible. There is an F inverse. So here you have like this. F of A is U, F of B, I managed to say V, and F of C is W. So you see that there is this inverse function which says if you travel in the opposite direction along the arrows, F inverse of U is A, F inverse of V is B, and F inverse of C, of W, is C. So bijective functions have inverses. Bijective functions have inverses. Okay? And it's very important to establish that a function is bijective, because then you can say, let me pick up the inverse function and do something with it, if you need to. Okay? So, you can see now why, if you have a bijection between two sets, why they have the same number of elements. Okay? And on top of that, why is it important to be injective or surjective for a function if you want to have an inverse? Well, when you have a function f defined on A with values in B, you should say f of anything in A where it goes. You cannot leave any point here orphan, like no arrow getting out of it. You have to say where it goes. Once you declare that your function accepts these inputs, then you have to say for each input what the output is. So if you had here a point that's not hit by f, this function would not have an inverse, because this would be like an orphan. You would not know where to go back to. And you're not allowed to just blindly pick something going back, because you have to explain why it goes there and not somewhere else. Okay, so that's why surjectivity is important if you have an inverse. And also a function should give you only one output for every input. That's built in on what a function is. Only one output for each input. So if you had, for a function f, two inputs going to the same place, then if you try to have an inverse, from that place you'd have to go back to both inputs. But that would not be a function, because the function is not allowed to go back to more than one thing. So that's why injectivity and surjectivity are important, to have an inverse function. So the picture looks about like this when it's a bijective function, and that's why they say that they have the same number of elements, and it really works even if the sets are infinite, if you manage to match them well. One element from one set, the element from the other set, then you declare the sets as having the same number, so to speak, the same quantity of elements in it. Okay? Okay, all right. Another thing is, another principle. If A1, A2, A3, say up to AN, are mutually disjoint sets. Mutually disjoint sets. So that means what? AI intersected AJ is empty. This phi letter of Greek, the Greek alphabet, is empty. That is, so I not equal to J. So any two, one less or equal than I, comma J, less or equal than N. Any two sets from here, any two of them have nothing in common. Okay? Well then, and this is a kindergarten, really. How many elements do you have in all in this set? How many? Okay, the picture is something like this. A1, A2, A3, and any two of them have nothing in common. How many elements are in the union? How could you find out? You want to say it? Say it.
A1 plus A2 plus A3.
You mean the cardinal, right? Because we cannot have the sets. So cardinal of A1 plus cardinal of A2 plus cardinal of A3. Okay? All right. So you just add when there are no overlaps. When there are overlaps, you have to keep track how many times you're overcounting that stuff. So it gets more complicated. But if there are no overlaps, you just add. So that's what this thing says. Now, in the remaining minute or so, which is probably inexistent, I have to say the multiplicative principle, so that'll probably have to wait because I cannot really have to take off. We'll have to wait for the next meeting. The multiplicative principle that goes about like this. If you want to go out and you have three hats to pick from, two bow ties, not to mention the pair of glasses, because we have them, so let's keep that. Okay? Five shirts, nine belts, two pants, three pairs of shoes. Okay, stop enough. In how many ways can you get dressed to go out? What do you do with all these numbers? You multiply them. Why? What was some obvious reason? Okay? That is the multiplicative principle. And using that, we'll be finally able to get into the business of counting. Along the way, I'll have to tell you other neat things or sets that are not finite to maybe convince you that math is worth coming to and listening to. But right now I have to tell you.
It is.
Thank you.